Listener Take. I am your host, Danny Rodriguez. Welcome back to the show. On this episode, we brought you a jack of all trades, Dr. Mark Sherwood. I say he's a jack of all trades because, well, dude is. He was a professional baseball player. He was a police officer for many years, including a SWAT officer during that time. He's an author of many books, including Fork Your Diet, The Quest for Wellness, Surviving the Garden of Eden. Great books that I've read personally that have made me not fat. Great stuff. And he's also a doctor. So we got to talk to him about a little bit of all of those. It was great. Being an expert on so many things, it's just easy to pick someone's brain like that. And also, he's just super well-spoken and a really good guy. But we talked about everything, man, from, you know, the mission of telling truths and like why he does what he does, and how important nutrition, sleep, stress management, all those things are important, and supplementation. And then we even went into the opposite, you know, of the spectrum. We talked about, you know, mass shootings and what could be done to fix those things, given his expertise and during his SWAT days. So it was a great episode, man. Dr. Mark Sherwood is a hell of a guy, and I hope you guys follow him after this and go check out his stuff. So without further ado, I bring to you the great Dr. Mark Sherwood. Alternate Take, what is up, you guys? We are back, man. We brought you guys a very special guest. We brought you guys Dr. Mark Sherwood. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm doing well, Danny. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just mentioning to you off the record right now that it's been a long time coming. I've been watching all your YouTube stuff, your information that you do, your lectures, and it's been helpful to me in my life, definitely, for sure on a personal level, and I try to spread it as much as I can, but I thought no better way than to have you on the show, man.
Yeah, well, I'm grateful, man, and super honored to be here, and hopefully we got some stuff to share that's going to help people out and give them some hope.
Absolutely. Starting with that, let's give the people a little background about you. Let's start with your credentials, sir, which I know are many, but it's one of the main reasons I brought you on the show. You're a big do-it-all, and it's a bit new for us. We usually have people that are like experts in one specific topic. You're like a expert in like seven, so it's nice for you to let the listeners know who they're dealing with.
Well, I mean, I've worn a lot of hats, and I think you mentioned the key thing. I'm a doer. I'm all about understanding problems, but I want to do something about them. And so going backwards, historically, I was a professional baseball player, played over in the country of Australia for a whole year and lived over there. This was before cell phones and computers, so big stories there. Also, after that, I came back and I joined the Tulsa Police Department, where I served for 24 and a half years, 10 years of which on the SWAT team. During my time there, I was able to win some bodybuilding competitions, and I traveled around the world with the power team. A lot of people don't know that. I did that for 12 years, and so that was kind of fun. And towards the, you know, the last 7-8 years of my time in the police department, I was assigned to the training academy, and I kind of had a curiosity because I was put in charge with developing our wellness program, and I want to know why, you know, officers and law enforcement people, and I quickly learned that the normal citizens was so affected by stress in life and why people were dying so quickly. And so I went on a mission. Danny and I never stopped learning. I went back to school despite all of my colleagues telling me I'd lost my ever-loving mind, and I decided to become a naturopathic doctor. Met my wife during that process, and we just kind of hit it off in the beginning. It was love at first sight. She's an osteopath, Dr. Michelle. I kind of call her more than my spare rib. She's my prime rib. And so, you know, she's awesome. And during our time, we blossomed and bloomed the Functional Medical Institute, which is based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We've written 3 number one best-selling books. We've made now 5 full-length movies. So we're producers and actors as well. I ran for governor in the state of Oklahoma the last time around. And we didn't win the election, but we won the calling. We followed the call, so it's all good. Don't know that I do again. Don't know that I won't. But I learned a whole lot of stuff about the Constitution and the different party lines and things that most people have no idea about. And honestly, most politicians who are elected know anything about. So that was kind of a sad reality for us. But we've kind of got known, I guess, perhaps over the last couple of years for the way we dealt with the COVID stuff. And we We're all about people having a choice to do whatever you want to do. We thought that was freedom. And we chose to stand firm in that. We never closed, never backed down with our treatment protocols or anything like that. And so we were able to, and this is way back before ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and all this stuff, we were able to treat over 10,000 people that had been exposed to and or tested positive for COVID, and nobody died. So we were happy with that. And I guess to wrap up that long answer to a short question, we thought that people would be interested, like in the mainstream media, when we kind of developed a protocol on that one. And wow, were we mistaken. Nobody would take that story at all. So that kind of began our quest to understand that our country, our world, is being deceived in a lot of different ways. We're not giving information. Mainstream media cannot be fully trusted anymore. And mainstream medicine, mainstream government, they can't be trusted anymore completely. There's good people there in all aspects. But as a whole, there's been so much corruption come in. It's deceived and destroyed people's lives. And so our job is now spent as truth tellers. I wear a little bracelet on my wrist. You know, you can't see it, but it says hope dealer. And so we're trying to give hope to people out there by giving them some good information to set them free physically, emotionally, spiritually.
I love that. Hear that, people? You're dealing with a baseball player, a police officer, a SWAT officer, a bodybuilder, a doctor, an author, a filmmaker. You ain't messing around, Mr. Sherwood. I love that about you. I like what you said about you're selling hope, you're selling truth, because there really is, as moral and as ethical as that is already, there's actually a market for that now. Like there's actually, you know, like for example, Tucker Carlson just got, you know, released from Fox.
Yeah.
And he's going to make more money from not being with Fox. I mean, the reason he's liked so much in the whole country is because he's telling the truth. And because of his true talent, same with Dr. Peter McCullough. Mm-hmm. We had him on the podcast, I think 2 weeks after he went on Joe Rogan.
Yep.
And it was the number one most listened to episode on Joe Rogan ever. I mean, this dude has had on every big guest you can possibly imagine. He's the king of kings. And that's a doctor telling the truth is the one that got the most listened. So credit to your point. I think that's the most important thing that people are looking for. I mean, I just actually had a conversation with a friend. It was very funny how it went down. But we're at a bar and he goes, I wish my old man was a little bit like tougher on me. And yeah. I was like, why do you, because in my head, I'm like, you don't seem like a soft kind of guy. You seem like you got your head squared on straight, like you got a house, you know, you got a couple of kids. But he's like, yeah, but he never challenged me. He was very like vulnerable and honest. He's like, you never like, and I don't mean like, you know, like, come on, son, we're putting on boxing gloves in the backyard. Not shit like that. But like, he's like, he never challenged me like with anything. Like if I told him I wanted to be an astronaut, he'd been like, okay. But he never like was like, okay, what's your plan? You know how hard it is to do that. If it is your dream, well, let's start pushing towards it. Like the way, you know, kind of like you would do maybe as a training officer in your academy, you're pushing, all right, this is what you want to do. Okay. Well, this is the steps to get there. He's like, I never felt challenged. Like, I feel like that lacking now, that I'm older and I have a little bit more wisdom. I realize that that should have been something he should have done. And it's ironic how, like, when you're a kid, like you're kind of like frustrated when you have a dad like that. You know, you're like, get off my back, man. Jesus Christ, you know? But you get older, thank God he was like that, you know? And it sounds like that's what the world's craving. We're craving a fatherly figure. We're craving a Joe Rogan. We're craving a Dr. Sherwood, someone to tell us the truth on various aspects of life, whether it be internally, whether it be externally. And that's actually where I wanted to start the show with you. I wanted to start internally. In other words, what can we do as individuals to fix ourselves to help society? Because obviously there's societal issues that are out of our control that we hope we can fix collectively, but it's got to start with us first. I wanted to start with health. Health is like the biggest one. It's something I struggle with, something everybody struggles with, whether it be mentally or physically. But what have been the most important findings of your work in the last 5 to 10 years that have really stuck with you guys, that you guys are doing on a daily basis that you wish you can get to your listeners where they can just put it through their ears now and be like, dude, this is stuff you should be doing every single day, or things you should be doing that are going to affect you short term or long term that you think are highly beneficial that for some reason, just regular humans just don't know.
Well, Danny, we've been conned over the last 50 years to really go to a doctor to answer this question. What is wrong with me? And that's the wrong question to ask. We should be asking, what is right with me and make it more right so it overrides and overdoes and overflows into the wrongs. In other words, it makes your system function better. And where I'm going with this is like in relationships. If we spend our time, like in my wife and I, if we spend all of our time, Danny, saying, hey, sweetheart, can we just spend the whole weekend trying to find something wrong with each other? You know, it's not going to be productive. Yeah. And we're going to find plenty of answers. So it's the wrong question. And the wrong question over the course of time has destroyed our psyche. And so it's lowered our bar of expectations to where we as people in America and across the world have forgotten how to critically think and take care of our own self. And so that's where it's got to start, man. Our bar of excellence is so poor. I mean, America's health is pathetic. And this is hard, you know, but I believe in loving people enough to tell them the truth. The greatest thing you can do to someone is tell them the truth, even if it hurts a little bit, because those wounds are faithful. When somebody tells you what you want to hear just because they don't want to lose a relationship, man, that is deceitful and hateful. And I think that's the worst thing that we've got going on, because everybody says, it's okay, sweetie, it's okay, son, whatever. It's not okay. Man, we are suffering right now as a country. Our health is trajectorily tending in the wrong direction so bad. We're concerned about China, you know, what economy, Russia. Stop. Just stop a moment. We're destroying ourselves every single day. We're our own worst enemy. So number one thing I want people to get is our health is our responsibility, and it's not that hard. It's not. All we have to do, and this is what we do, and people in our clinic, which we see people all around the country, thankfully, because of, you know, the ability to get on electronic modems like this, we teach people how to set themselves free from unnecessary use of medication, how to get clear and reverse common disease processes such as type 2 diabetes, which frankly should not exist with one single person on planet Earth. Take that one and think about that a moment. Now, having said that, the following things people should be doing every day. When we consume food, look at it. If we realize it's in its correct condition, correct packaging, the way it was made in nature, probably food. If it wasn't like that, it was never food. In other words, there was no Dr. Pepper streams in the Garden of Eden. There was no French fry bushes. There were no donut trees. And no, there were not pasta flowers everywhere. They weren't there. And so that stuff is not food, and it's destroying people's lives. Number two, we've got to begin to align ourselves with people that are really going to lift us up and not tear us down. Addiction can become prevalent in chaos and drama and negativity, just like it can in positivity. Understand what's out there, man, but don't be consumed with it. And don't spend all your time talking about evil and wrong and all that stuff, because you'll feed the ego of evil and wrong. Number three, you got to get some sleep. Sleep is underrated. It's underappreciated. The older you get, the less melatonin you get produced from the pineal gland in the brain. Now, that poses a problem, because people, as they age, they say, well, I don't need more sleep. Yeah, you do. 7 to 8 hours. Everybody needs it every day. And, you know, to be real simple, you got to move, man. We are a sedentary society, and sitting is the new smoking. We need to be moving more and sitting less. The only day you don't exercise is the day you die. And that's the point. You know, movement is life. Lack of movement is one step closer to rigor mortis. And so those are things to really keep in mind. Now, that's from a basic high level, and it's designed to get the thinking changed for people into a place that's really about truth.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting you say that you got to move, because when you move, moving is our natural correlation with that, or at least the word that comes to mind is pain. That's what people think.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm going to be sore.
Yep.
Man, it's going to take me 2 weeks to get into these workouts. It's going to take me forever to see results. And I think that comes from this addiction we have to these dopamine rushes, which I have all the damn time. Like, okay, oh, coffee.
Totally.
Coffee, boom. Then my favorite TV show. Boom. Got it. You know, my favorite song. Boom. Everything I do is just pleasures. And I noticed that my screen. Love it. I'm scrolling. I see a meme. I send it to my friends, yada, yada, whatever. And I notice that I do that all the time. And I notice everybody does this. Like, but that's the first step, right? Noticing, okay, I'm doing things that aren't productive and are only just, you know, keeping me maintained up here, I got to do some suffering, you know, and noticing that is step one, but doing it is just another thing. Like I notice it all the time, but they're still like, ah, but I want to go. No, of course you don't want to go. I think that's the part that people struggle with. And it's just as simple as doing it. You know, it's hard to do it, but it's as simple as just doing it. You know, it's hard to go, I'm going to get out there and push some sleds. I'm going to do whatever, you know, especially when you got kids. Yeah, I don't got none of that. So I got really no excuses, but, you know, but I understand why people make the excuses, but like you said, I started looking at it differently. I started making it not so much about myself now and going what I have to do. I started thinking about it now as stop being so damn selfish.
Yeah. Like,
you got a family, you got, even if you don't have a primary family, you got nieces, nephews, cousins, mom and dad, they all care about you. And when you're 45, 50, and you got these crazy health issues and we have to watch you suffer and you prematurely die because of your own doing, like, dude, you're being selfish. Like, that's how I see it now. Like, you know, people care about you and you have a duty to people that have raised you, especially, you know, to at least give them the best life that you can possibly give because, you know, they took time out of their lives. You know, more than you'll ever know until you have your own kids, you'll understand, you know, to raise you correctly. So I see it that way and it helps me feel better. It's kind of like Christmas, you know, you don't buy yourself a gift for Christmas. You don't give a shit, but you want to buy somebody else a gift because you care about having it. So that's how I see it with health now. And I'm like, it makes it easier for me to go out there and do some stuff now.
Yeah, man, that's important perspective to have, Danny, because like everybody, you know, right now, you know, I'm looking at you on the screen, I'm thinking, how can I best bless this man? And how can I best bless every single person that is listening right now? And the best way to do that is to understand that every person, the life that we live is a gift, man. It's a blessing. It's one of the things that nobody can be you. Nobody can be me. So that must mean there's something special that I'm supposed to do and you're supposed to do for the world. When we live in a way that's trying to be a blessing to other people, we don't live self-centered. We don't live selfish. We live selfless and self-sacrificing, and people get that. And so we look at the concept of exercise. It's been sort of put in a box of, I got to go out there and exercise to lose weight. No, you don't. You got to go out there and exercise because that's what your body's made to do. It's what you're made to do. It is more costly to be unhealthy than it is to be healthy. People in my life, and I'm coming up on the sixth decade of life, coming up 60 years old, I'm thinking, my God, where did the time go? But I realize, and I have realized over time, that if I can give my life successfully in that day for the benefit of others, I'm actually filling up my well in my own life so I have more to give. And so it reverses like that. It's like giving encouragement to somebody else is empowering yourself with more encouragement. And it's a cycle of life. It's a cycle of empowerment that really needs to be infused freshly into mankind today.
I agree. And I also agree. It's a lot of the duty relies on yourself to be able to accept information and utilize it as best you can. In other words, like you played baseball. I'm sure you grew up with a bunch of players that they had the best tutors, they had the best this, and they didn't get as far as you got.
Right.
And there's probably the reason why being is because you took instruction better than probably they did, even though they had the instructors. You know, I had a cousin growing up, and the dude couldn't hit over 250 growing up, and not even once. Terrible. You know, and I remember he would go up to it's like second, third at bat, and he would still look at that first pitch down the middle. I'm like, what's wrong with you? You saw this pitcher twice already. No surprise. You got to get used to the bat. Like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, but. And his head is like, no, this is how I bat. And you're like, well, it's not working. I don't know what to tell you. So it's his job to be like, okay, what I'm doing is not working. I need to figure out other approaches to life that people can help me so I can get better at this. And that's humility. That's a thirst for knowledge. And I think a lot of times we only get that when it's people in our perceived value. In other words, I won't get instruction from this baseball coach, some random dude give me instruction. But if Mike Trout gives me instruction, then I'll listen. Dude, but you're like,
so true.
Right. But you're like, if they're saying the same thing, you're the dumb one because you could have got it from this guy for free. You just paid Mike Trout $30,000 for an hour lesson. And this guy told you the same thing, Mike Trout, but you only listened to Trout because of how far he's gone. Meanwhile, it's your job to perceive information and utilize it. So I don't care if the best information comes from the lowest level or from the the rank doesn't really matter as long as the information you're getting is tremendous. And I love that about people that are growing yourself. Like, you have accomplished so many damn things. And I know for a fact it didn't come from, you know, from that type of style of learning. You came from accepting a bunch of stuff and utilizing it to your best and then making it your own. You know, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, man, I didn't have a silver spoon in my mouth. I didn't have the best talent in the world. I mean, I listened, and I had some coaches that were damn tough on me, man. I remember one time I was in a college baseball game, and I'll never forget my coach. I'll never forget this happened. I think it was in my senior year, and there was a scout in the stands, and we were playing at home. And I remember getting so pissed after the first inning that I took my catcher's mask off and I threw it down and it bounced and hit against the screen on the backstop. My coach was standing right there and he, in front of everybody, my parents, the scout, he said, take your stuff off right now. Get out of the ballpark and I want you to jog around the ballpark 10 times before coming back in here. Dude, I learned a lot. Yeah. I learned the lesson that I have to control myself, and I had to learn the lesson that was hard, that I had to be an example. But all that said, that and other things in life have put me in a position where you don't have to be the most talented person to be successful or to achieve things, but you have to work hard. Nobody's going to give it to you. Nobody's going to hand it to you, nor should you expect it. Go out there and get it and make it happen. I didn't get to start in college in baseball until my senior year as a catcher. And I worked hard. I used to hit, no kidding, until my hands bled. You know, the blisters would, and they would pop and they would bleed. And I used to actually have someone with a fungo bat. Remember the fungo bats, you know? I used to have them hit fungos at me, and I would block them with my chest. Oof. Because I did not want to be a wimp. I wanted to be tough. And I wanted to be able to take a blow. I wanted to be able to block pitches behind the plate that got in the dirt. And I became the best at that because I worked at it. And I wasn't the best hitter in the world, but I learned to discipline myself to maximize the benefits of the gifts, things, and talents that I had. And life's been like that for me. I've always kind of had a chip on my shoulder to kind of prove something. And it's not really prove something to somebody else. Although, you know how it goes. Somebody can say, I bet you can't do that. And you're going to say, bet I can. Yeah. Right. And so, but there's some of that going on, but I think inside you've got to continue to prove it to yourself. You can carry it more, you can do more. And overall in our world today, we've lost that edge as the most part. And that becomes a problem because we're wanting somebody else to do it for us instead of just taking the bull by the horns, as we like to say, and doing it ourselves. And every person, you know, you mentioned something earlier, you know, my life has kind of transitioned into more of a father figure. And I'm like, oh, wow, man, that's just a freaking weird thing to even say and think about. But I truly do want people that are younger than me to become better than me. I truly do. And if you can learn some of the lessons that I've learned in my life and you can put those into practice now, so you don't have to learn the painful lessons, man, that makes me happy. You know, I want your podcast to be the best podcast. And I want your dreams to become the best dreams ever. And I want you to achieve those dreams bigger than you ever thought. And I really mean that. Now, having said that, I mean that for everybody, because there is achievement in that. There's satisfaction in that. And there's reward in that that cannot be explained. You just have to live it out.
Absolutely, sir. I couldn't agree more. Have you noticed how doing all these things physically, dietary, how much has it bled into your other life? Financially, business-wise, because you've obviously done incredible in that area as well. And I want people to realize that they go hand in hand, that like when you do when you just start off with just your diet and health and your exercise, it's the main thing you need to focus on to get your life squared away for everything. But when you do that, everything else starts getting way better. Your clarity gets better. How quickly did you realize that was a instant realization for you, where you're like, whoa, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be eating like this and doing things like this because the kind of success I'm getting everywhere else.
Yeah. Probably 30 years ago, I had this epiphany moment that was the connection between spiritual, emotional, physical, and financial health. And it was interesting because it just kind of hit me one day. Where do people struggle the most? They struggle in the area of physicality. They struggle in health. That becomes that thing that they always put on the side, and it affects them emotionally because they never feel well. They're not able to think well. It affects them spiritually because inside of them, they got this wound and this hurt that's not at peace. It affects them financially because they overspend money in areas that they don't need to. It affects their decision-making because they're distracted, because they can't think, because they're always thinking about something else. And I realized this moment in time in my life that when you master, not if, but when you master managing effectively and controlling these four aspects of your life, nutrition, sleep, stress management, and movement, nutrition, sleep, stress management, movement. When you master those things, and when you get control of those things, everything else falls into alignment. Everything else falls into alignment so much so that you can't turn off the principles of the progress. In other words, people out there that are listening right now that have an entrepreneurial business or whatever, or have business, and you say, well, I'm struggling with business. Fix your health and watch your business grow. You'll make better decisions. And there's some principles there that I think hold true, like the body we walk around in today. I mean, I don't have high body fat, and my wife doesn't either. And you know, I won't go into my physical stats, but I've got muscle, right? And so being older, people see us and they're immediately drawn to that because it's really weird and it's unusual. Think about that today in the prospect of business, emotional, and spiritual health. When you walk in a room, if you're physically fit, in shape, and you've got control of this thing, you're going to create attention. You're going to create attention so much that people are going to seek you out. They're going to go, man, what is it about you? Or they're going to say, you look great. Or, hey, Danny, man, boy, man, you're ripped, dude. And it's going to start a conversation. And that conversation starter is key because this thing we walk around in is your business card. It represents something. Either it represents slothfulness or it represents excellence. You choose. And we've got to get that right. There's a guy that is in California. And I remember working with him. He's got this big old construction company. And this is probably, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. I met him at a conference. He came up and he was just out of shape, diabetic, heart disease, all this mess. He said, Mark, can you help me? And I said, yes, under one condition. He goes, what's that? I'll do anything. And he had ability to pay for whatever. I said, I need you to do exactly what I say and accept criticism and accept compliments at the same time and don't complain about it. And if you complain about it, just be okay that I'm going to correct you and going to keep you going. He said, okay. Got to working. All his disease processes were reversed in about a 6-month period. Pretty cool.
Wow.
I made a promise to him, and I'll call him John. I said, John, what is your desire with business? He goes, I want to be bi-coastal. For those that don't know, that means I want to have a business in my on each coast. I said, well, do you want to go in the central part of the U.S.? He goes, yeah, eventually, but I want to go bi-coastal first. And I said, okay, so central, eastern, western. Yes. I said, when you master this, you mark it down right now. When you get this thing done, that will happen. Well, he's got a company in Florida, a company in Texas, and a company in California. You Wow. can't shut the thing off. And the guy is so successful. And it's not about just money. But to this day, he says, I don't have the distraction of ill health. I think more clear. I sleep better. Exercise is part of what I do. People see it. People are drawn to it. It has drawn business into my life.
Wow. That's amazing. You're right. Yeah. It is a business card. To me, it's like a car. Same thing. You know, yeah. You know, when you're 18 and have a fancy car, no one cares. But when you're 16 and have a fancy car, they're like, that dude earned that car.
Yeah.
Body. You know, when you're 18 and have a good body, no one cares. No one's impressed. But when you're 60 and you have a great body, 50, you have a great body, 40, you have a great body, we're like, okay, this dude's consistently, you know, proving it to everybody. It sucks because it's amazing. It just shows how much you're doing and it's amazing. But it also sucks because it's like, damn, like, there's like, I always make a joke that the fat people in the world, they know the most about health.
I know, right? It's like, oh,
because they do. Yeah. Like they up all night Googling stuff. Like, what am I supposed to eat? They know. You can have a conversation with a fat guy about what to eat and what not to eat, and they'll probably give you more information than you can ever learn. But yeah. They just don't have they don't have the will to do it. That's the only difference. So like, I understand their frustration, like people that aren't in good shape, frustration as to where, like, well, you tell them like, things like, well, you haven't proved it. You're like, I know it's true. I haven't, but you're like, but I also know what to do, you know, like, cause they take, they're a little sensitive. Those they'll take that like, as like, you don't know what you're talking about. And you're like, I do know what I'm talking about. I'm just lazy. But, so I like both perspectives. I think what you're saying is 100% correct. And it's amazing to see your instruction affect other people, especially because, like we said, it's really the roots of it all. It's just health. It's so crazy how damn important it is. And I like what you said earlier about pointing out everything that's wrong and how that it can only just really, at some point, that's too much. It goes overboard. Yeah. There's like various tests people can do for health to find out which foods like flourish for you. I know there's companies that do that. You can go pay a decent fee and they tell you, hey, you're really good with avocados. Hey, you're really bad with this, you know, try these out. You know, these ones make you inflamed. These ones don't. These ones, yada, yada. I think those services are great if people want to really invest in those and just go one time, you know, go get your blood work done. It's like, or see what works for you, you know, because there's a variety of diets that work for everybody. I think obviously whole foods is your best choice, but I really like what you had to say about that. I think that's very important. It does affect your whole life, you know, and
Well, I think people understand too, that when you start going out here and trying to take charge of your health, you're right, Danny, you need to go out and get good blood work, not the conventional blood work. There is no such thing as health insurance. People need to stop and understand it's not health insurance. It's sick insurance. And it's supposed to be a for-profit business that has customers that are sick and ill. So if it was a for-profit business, which it is, why would they in any right way, shape, or form teach people how to be well, because you're going to minimize and destroy your business? That doesn't make sense. So we need to understand that health insurance is not health insurance. It is sick insurance. And do we need it for emergencies? Yes. Our health is up to us. Our health is tied to our wealth. When you look at blood work from that conventional system, it's terrible. It's terrible. You can actually go get blood work and get clearances every year from the general old PCP, and you can still be diabetic and have heart disease. Now, isn't that a comforting feeling? You have to ask the right questions, and the wrong questions are being asked. And when you ask the wrong question, even if you get the right answer, it's still wrong. And so when you seek out a practitioner, you want very comprehensive blood testing. You mentioned like food sensitivity, food allergy, food inflammatory testing, micronutrient testing, stool testing. All these things are very important. And we do that with our own clientele around the country. We do genetic testing as well, which I think is fascinating. And so all of that stuff that you get should be put into the context and box, Danny, of creating a plan for you specifically and personalized wise to lead you down a pathway of disease resilience or disease avoidance or maybe disease prevention. And so that is what we should be doing, right? And it's not that hard. And you should, with a capital S, you should be investing real dollars in that, because when you don't, you have no skin in the game and it means nothing. And that's why people fail right there, because they haven't invested the money. Because when you go out there and you say, I'm going to invest in a new suit. Well, you're going to wear that suit because you invested in it. If you go out there and you pay for a good meal, you're not going to look at that meal and just walk off. You're going to eat it because you paid for it. When you invest in your health, you're going to do it because you paid for it. So I want people to pay, man. I think that's a good principle for that. And people need to put the effort in and get rid of the excuses, man. Excuses are so addictive today and commonplace that it becomes redundant. When people come into our office and they say things like, well, I have type 2 diabetes, and because of that, I fill in the blank. I stop them and correct them immediately. You're not going to talk like that in front of me. No, repeat after me. I live a life I live a life conducive with healthy blood sugar.
Absolutely.
See, I don't let them do that.
I love it. I love the no excuses approach, man, because that's really what it is. Yeah. When it comes to supplements, what are things that you've noticed that have really benefited people a lot within the last 5? I see like the big things that people are talking about a lot right now are like high-end collagen. I know people using a lot of mushrooms, whether it be like, you know, lion's mane or some sort of something to put in your coffee. I see people using the use of nootropics a lot, whether it be a certain company. I see a lot of basic things like that. I see people using like better cooking oils. What are things that are that you use on your daily basis that people should be using? Anything that helps you recover faster, that helps you have better sleep clarity, anything like that.
Well, I'll give people my protocol. This is what I use, and I'll give you the top ones you have to have. This is like the have to, got to do. Every single person listening right now above the age of 12 need 5,000 IUs minimum of vitamin D. You got to have it. Do not, I don't care if you live in a sunny climate, it's irrelevant. The darker your skin is, the more you need it. That's a very important thing for the Mexican-Americans, the African-Americans out there, and I'm kind of a mixed. You need more of that because this protects the body from receiving too much UVB, which is necessary to make vitamin D in the body. So you got to have more. Vitamin D is very important for brain, bone, and heart disease, of course. I've tested the omega index, omega-3s, of thousands of people for the last 10 years. 100% have been deficient. So you need at least 3 to 4 grams of an omega-3 that has a 3-to-2 part ratio of EPA over DHA. Really important. When you look at that selection on the back, and for example, something has 1,000 milligrams, or you know, you want to make sure that it has within that 1,000 milligrams, which is equivalent to 1 gram, 3 parts to 2 parts, covering that whole oil. 1,000 milligrams, if the label says it's got 300 milligrams of EPA and 200 milligrams of DHA, that equals 500 milligrams. What are the other 500 milligrams? That is a bad, horrible product to buy. Don't do it, right? So make sure it fills up the whole thing. Collagen is great as well. I actually have some right now, drinking it my coffee. I put it in there every day. You do want to have more than just bone collagen. That's very popular out there. You want also skin collagen. I use something called whole body collagen in mine because I want both, right? You also most likely need to take in some vitamin C, as in Charlie. You don't manufacture C in the body. It becomes necessary. Somewhere around 1,000 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day is probably going to be optimal for people. I like a good multivitamin as well. I will take one of those every day. Those are the ones you probably need with a capital N every single day, every single person, period. Now, I also take some niacin, about 1,500 milligrams, which helps me with lipid control because you don't want your lipids or your cholesterol markers to get inflamed. LDL is not a bad thing. Don't try to lower it just because it got high. That's a bad move. It's good. LDL carries cholesterol, which is great for repair of cell membranes, good for the brain, and also necessary for hormone creation. I also take a lot of nitric oxide. It helps with vasodilation. Nitric oxide is essential to manufacture red blood cells that carry oxygen, so that'd be kind of important. So I take little wafers called NO2U that I really, really like a lot, and I use colostrum. Colostrum from a good bovine source that actually has immunoglobulins in it. And by the way, as an FYI, we use it early on in COVID because cows or bovine has coronavirus and they don't die. So if you can get some of that conferred and transferred immunity from a good colostrum product, that will help you a lot. I use a broccoli sprout powder, which is good. That actually has a good induction of your own antioxidant regulatory system. So people have heard about ivermectin out here, I'm sure. Think about broccoli sprout powders being that times 100. It's that good. And so, you know, and those are just a few highlights. I'll also use some resveratrol, quercetin, zinc, and I take a whole bunch of stuff. You know, I'll use specialized pro-resolve and mediators to sort of minimize inflammation in the body, digestive enzymes, et cetera. So a lot of things I use, and a bunch of peptides. I'll use peptides such as tesamorelin, thymosin alpha 1, BPC-157. I know Joe Rogan's talked about those things a lot. A Last time I was listening to his podcast, I thought he was talking to me. And I was like, wow, where'd you get that stuff? You're not one of my patients, dude. But they're interesting. So I use a ton of those peptides out there. Those are the real deal. And so there's just a ton of stuff that my wife and I use. We're using it for the reason because we feel like we have to be examples for people to see. And we feel like we need to know what we're talking about so we can help other people.
I love it. And it's funny because that analogy I used earlier about the working from the inside out.
Yeah.
It sounds like everything that you're doing is essentially just amazing for your gut. And that's like what I've been focusing on a lot in health over the last 5 years, I would say, ever since like probably 2010. It's been a very, it's emphasized a lot in health culture. I know broccoli sprout powder. I remember Dr. Rhonda Patrick talking about that, how tremendous that is for your gut health and whatnot.
Totally.
So I think that's great because it's kind of the same thing, you know, working from the inside, it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's like when, you know, a lot of people today are affected by leaky gut syndrome, probably one in two, honestly, and that is the precursor or the developmental opportunity for autoimmune disease. And that really didn't really hit our society until about 50 years ago. And even more so about 30 years ago with the induction of the food pyramid that sort of prompted the genetic alteration of some of our proteins and the massive induction of gluten that we're including in our diet. And that destroys the gut lining. And so this has created a lot of, again, autoimmunity, cancers, Alzheimer's, dementia, heart disease, et cetera, type 2 diabetes, as I mentioned earlier. And, you know, Hippocrates said a long time ago, you know, and he's rolling over his grave right now because he's the dude that's father in modern day medicine, supposedly. But he said, let food be thy medicine. He also said, health begins in the gut. And then he also said something really cool. He said, death begins in the colon. And you know, all of those things, though oversimplified, have a heck of a lot of truth. Oh, yeah. One thing I do that's pretty cool that people should be aware of, I drink a lot of infused hydrogen water. Hydrogen is a small little molecule. It's the smallest, lightest molecule in the periodic chart. It can cross the blood-brain barriers, and it actually eliminates selectively excess free radicals, which create the aging process. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do. And my wife and I, we didn't learn all this from somebody. We just went out there with the idea, I want to keep learning. And we kept looking and searching, and we're still learning stuff today.
I love it. I love it. I want to do a complete 180, sir. I want to do a complete
180
because I want to tap into your other expertises. And this one's a very complicated one, but I know you have very select thoughts on it. And I know you're very wise on the matter because it's been something that's been crazy for our country for a while now is the mass shootings and school shootings going on.
Yeah.
I've seen you offer very, very wise thoughts on the matter. And I wanted you to tell the audience what you think about, you know, what solutions we could be done, because obviously your experience as a SWAT officer for that many years, you know it all. SWAT officers have dealt with the most intense situations. You deal with active shooters all the time. Not only do you deal with the most evil person in the world who's taking a hostage or doing whatever, as soon as it's over, you're immediately doing the 180 and caring for this individual who just had the most trauma in their life. So you're a psychologist, you're a damn Marine, you're a soldier, you know what I mean? You're all in one package. So I would take your opinion very seriously when it comes to matters of this, of these times. It's crazy stuff.
Well, people need to understand, first of all, that guns don't kill people. People kill people. The very first murder occurred with Iraq. The greatest mass murders in our country occurred with fertilizer and airplanes. And so having said that, we need to take a little step back and realize that I know evil's increasing in the world, and evil's increasing, violence is increasing because of a lot of societal, cultural, and nutritional issues, right? And so in my training, of course, I've been trained to respond to school shootings for mass shooters and all this stuff in my SWAT team days, and have been involved in several instances over the, you know, the last couple decades. And you know, seeing people die in front of me, and you don't forget that. Seeing children die in front of me, seeing children, you know, killed. And that's not okay, right? So I learned a lesson years ago in the country of Israel. And it was a lesson I'll never forget. It was probably back in the 90s, and I was there working. And I remember there was a soldier standing in front of a big high fence with razor wire at a fence that had a gate, and it was closed. And he was standing there, and I didn't know what he was guarding. And I asked him, you know, very polite. And he was kind. He said, this is a school. And I thought, wow. I said, what happened? Was there some kind of threat? You know, it's very interesting. He goes, no. He said, we believe in protecting our future. And I had to think about that for the time, because at first I didn't really understand it. But as I've grown, I've understood it more. So having said that, society, no doubt, Danny, has progressed to this place of hyper-violence and hyper-expression of suicidal ideologies turned outside into homicidal methodologies. That's a big deal. We have got to stop these active shooters by giving them room to pause. Room to pause, what does that look like? And I was asked to put together a school plan, you know, several months ago, and I put some thought to it. And I thought, okay, we've got to, first of all, have an entrance to this school that is highly surveilled. In other words, a one-way in type of entrance. Yes, you're going to have multiple exits, but those would only be opened in the case of emergency. One-way in entrance that's highly surveilled. In other words, a little physical barrier goes a long ways. Number two goes right with that. You got to have visible presence of some type of security, i.e. law enforcement officer out there. And it can be as minimal as having a law enforcement officer car out there, where someone sees that and says to themselves, even if they don't see somebody, I bet you there's somebody around that's going to have a gun. See what I'm going with that? And so that's important. So visible entry with surveillance and also visible deterrent and security. And the third prong of this is to go ahead and train the staff and employees of the school in the carrying concealed weapon processes and laws of your city and state and county, right? And equip them. If they want to carry firearms, do that. And the ones that don't, okay, work together, because when you put a sign up there, which represents the third prong approach, that says something like this, be advised, some personnel on these grounds may be armed. Well, those three things are going to stop immediately a shooter from going into get these soft targets. A gun-free zone that's broadcast out there with a sign is a soft target. These maniacs, lunatics, psychotic people, they want to inflict as much pain as possible on somebody else because they're hurting inside and they're wounded inside. And frankly, many times quite evil inside. And we have to stop that. If you give them room to pause, you might avert lives that are killed inside, and you might even save their life as well. Now, with that said, I get the arguments behind it is, well, yeah, you know, it's AR-15s. Oh, well, yeah, we don't want to make fortresses for our schools. But guess what? We have security at the airport now, don't we? Because people use planes as weapons. We have security. You go in a museum. You go in Congress in Washington, D.C. They got security. They got armed security. Why do we not view our children that way? Danny, it's preposterous. We have got to love our kids enough to not allow schools to become place of soft target locations for maniacs to hit. And secondly, we have to understand that children should be taught the ideas of violence in society and to deal with it in a better way. That's part of the education process, right? School shouldn't be about indoctrination. It should be about education and preparation for life. Anything else is not acceptable. And by the way, education really begins in the home, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Parents need to get involved. People say, well, you know, there's a lot of cost to this stuff. I don't think so. I bet you in different communities, if you went to the school, the communities and said, is there any retired military out here, retired law enforcement out here that just want to volunteer some time and do that? I bet you'd have so many people that you'd have to turn some away and get a rotation basis. People want to help, but they're rendered powerless by these politicians that are just about platforms to get their votes out there. It's not okay anymore, Danny, and we have got to have leaders in place that have some common sense and practicality. Taking guns away is not the answer. If and when you do that, that is a slippery slope, not just to the Second Amendment, Stop at that. It's a slippery slope to taking away our First Amendment. It's a slippery slope to giving more power to a federal government that was never meant to be empowered over the people. The people are the government. The people are the governors of the government. And that's the way it should be. And yet, we're now looking for the federal government to solve a problem. In both aspects, it's a mistake. So I know that was a long answer to that question, but there's a lot to that. And you're right, it's a complicated issue. I don't have all the right answers. But Danny, I can sit down with somebody that might think I'm a lunatic and might disagree with everything I said. And if we'll have a calm conversation and I want to hear their concerns, that is the beauty of America. We can come up with answers without hating each other. We're never going to agree on everything. We're not. And that's good, because when you don't agree, it forces you to work to create a solution. And to me, that's not a negative. That's an opportunity for excellence.
Right. I couldn't agree more. I didn't disagree with anything you had to say. I like what you said about the gun-free zone sign thing. I think that's insane.
Yeah.
I think it's having a house in Bel Air with your door open and saying, come on in. That's basically what it is.
Yep.
I think people do it as simple as having a dog in their backyard with a sign on their gate that says, warning, dog back here, we'll bite you.
Like, totally.
People do it all the time, you know. People put stickers in their car that if you get on my, you know, if you ride me on this whole way, we'll see what happens. Funny sticker, but
they're
being serious. You know, it's a warning sign to let you know that we will not take this. And I think it's the responsibility of adults to let children know we are here to protect you.
Yeah, we've got a society now that is shirking the responsibility.
Correct.
I encourage every parent right now to understand that it's your job. My job to train your kids up nutritionally, right? Physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and financially. When you do that, they're going to be excellent in society. If you transfer that to the school system, if you transfer that to the church, if you transfer that to government, transfer that to the coach, I mean, there's benefits there in those things, but it's not their primary responsibility. It's the parent.
Absolutely. Not only am I here to protect you, but I'm here to raise you to want to protect others when you get
right.
older. Same thing.
That's right.
And I find it fascinating. I mean, you look at the most defunded programs I'm in California. The biggest defunded program was LA school police. You know, and you're like, these are the politicians that claim so much to care about the safety of children, and they abolished the LA school police when the biggest target that we have in our country now is gun-free zones, schools, the innocent. And I think we have an infatuation with understanding why people commit these things.
Yeah.
And you lose my empathy once you've already committed it. I don't care anymore. I feel really bad for people that have suicidal thoughts. I think you
do
whatever you can to go get that fixed. I think you should go to therapy. I think you should read books. You should do whatever. Most depression is fixable.
Yes,
it is. That being said, once you start getting thoughts to hurt other people, you lost my empathy. And it's our job as citizens to realize that's no longer something we need to understand. That's evil. And evil needs to go away. Because now, once you decide to hurt other people, it's done. Especially children. You're going out of your way to hurt the most weakest people that can possibly do anything to protect themselves. And I think we have too much of an infatuation with understanding, well, why do they do that? I don't care anymore. I really don't.
Yeah.
You shot a bunch of kids and random people. I don't care what your cause was. I don't care if it was a just cause or not. I don't care. It's gone. You've lost everything about me. And I think we need to do a better job of doing that, because we do have a weird thing in our society where we care more about the people committing crimes than we do about people that are victimized by crimes. No one is understanding why did this guy hit his wife? I don't give a shit. Don't hit your wife, man.
No matter.
I don't care. Don't do it. Just walk away and get a divorce. How about that? Pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have too much of a nice bone for people like that. I just saw there was a case in Texas where some dude pretend to rob a restaurant with a gun that he did not have a gun. He pretended like he had one, and then the patron smoked him. And they're like, "Well, he did too much. He shot him too many times on the ground."
No.
Like, I care. Like, this dude tried to pretend it, at least in his mind. He pretended to this person behind the counter who owns this restaurant, who's worked his ass off to get this place, is getting his life threatened for everything that he's built. and we're worrying about the guy who did that. Like, I'm sorry. I think we need to have a better understanding of society, knowing that it's our job to protect the good and eliminate the bad. And I don't mean eliminate the bad like we have to go to extreme measures, but I mean, like,
yeah,
if someone's willing to take your life, then they know that their life should be taken too. It's just simple as that. You know, if you're going to try to kill somebody, that's the equal result. It's not overboard. It's equal.
No, it's a consequence of their actions, man. I mean, you know, I looked at that in many different ways. Even law enforcement career, you don't go out there to try to kill somebody.
Never.
It's not what you do, man. You're trying to go out there and protect and serve the people and honor the Constitution of the United States and of the state, right? And the city laws and ordinances. That's what you do. And you go out there to do that, it's the greatest job in the world.
Right.
And yet, that's what we're supposed to be doing as citizens, too, with citizens that carry firearms. Your job is to protect your family, man. And your job is to protect mankind. You can't feel bad about that.
Right.
It's a heavy responsibility. It's a big old responsibility you have to own. But when somebody makes that choice to do that, yeah, that's grievous. I don't like it. I feel badly for them. But you're bought and paid for, dude. That's the way it is. And sorry, but that's the way it is. And we've got to get to that point right now, because if somebody were to attack our country, you know, a foreign country or something like that, I guarantee we'd have that attitude.
Right.
But why can't we have the attitude with people that kill our own people from within? It seems the weirdest, oddest dichotomy in the world. And it's brainwashing. I mean, you know, these politicians, which I have, you know, little respect for, because it's really a uniparty system that's designed to keep people in power and to make them think they're good. They're not servants. They're self-serving. And the rules and laws they're doing, just like you talked about, the defund the LA County school police. What an ignorant thing to do. And they did it to appease a voter bloc after they manipulated the voter bloc. So it's just, I mean, there's so much of that discussion. And I think that people need to take a fresh look at it. And the citizens of this country better take charge again before we get all of our freedoms taken away.
Absolutely. It's the old saying, exposure clears up everything. The more exposure you get to anything, the more you have a better understanding of something. So the main premise that they're running on is that young people do not trust the police. They're afraid of police.
Oh,
how are they going to trust and be? How are they going to trust the police? How are they going to be unafraid of the police if they never have any interactions with them? The best interactions they can have with them is when you have 5-6 school officers there all the time, talking to them, checking in on their grades, going to their baseball practices, saying, "Hey, man, I saw you got an F. What the hell's wrong with you?" Like, you know, talking to them every single day, getting to know their personality. You just got rid of that. So now the only time they'll ever see them is in their worst moments of their life. You want them to see them in good moments so they can be at that school, so they can go to their pep rally, so they can be there. And so the kids go, "Man, I remember that guy. You know, he was always there. We never had any problems at the school. No one came in with a gun because everyone knew, you know, Officer Sherwood was always there, man. And he always
checked
on us. You know, he'd always say, 'Get home, man. Stop hanging around here after school.' All right, I will. All right, whatever." But you just got rid of all those great interactions that people from the 60s, 70s, 80s consistently talk about, those foot beat officers, those guys that
be a part of their lives.
So yeah, we want young people to trust and not be afraid of police, but we're going to take away their only chances of them ever talking to them. And then now we're getting rid of their safety. Number one, now there's no one there at all to protect them at all. Just walk in, do whatever the hell you want. "Oh, we got a gate." Like, you like, "I'm afraid of a gate. I'm Mexican. I'm not afraid of a gate. Okay, I'm gonna jump over the gate. No problem. Get out of here with that. Okay. You know, and neither are crazy people. We've made our decisions to not be afraid of shit like that. Okay. If you're crazy,
we're gonna get
the job done. That's it. And the only people that have the heart and the willing to sacrifice themselves, you just took them away. You know, I understand why parents are frustrated. You know, I can't imagine if there was a situation like that, if my kid was in the school.
Oh my God.
It's gonna be a situation soon. It's gonna happen where parents are going, F you to all the police. We're running in. We don't care.
And they will.
Police is going to have a situation where, like, we can't shoot innocent parents who are trying to save their kids' lives. What the hell are we going to do? Like, and if they're running in, how bad does that make us look? We're not running in. Like,
well, crap. Like the Uvalde situation, you know, that was on the edge of happening. You know, I remember way back in the day, I was a foot patrol officer for a while. And I remember, you know, just a dangerous job. But Danny, I learned so much from people. I learned so much about people, and I developed friendships with people. And there's one guy I remember. He was just a drug dealer, man. He was a gangster back in the day. You know, I think he was part of the Crips gang. He was a bad guy, and I would chase him all the time, and I would catch him, you know, most of the time, and put him in jail as a juvenile. Well, eventually he went to prison, but I never treated him bad. But he had respect for me because we talked, even though we different sides of the block, whatever. And I remember years went by, and this is probably back in the maybe 15 years ago. I was speaking at a church, and I had a guy come up to me at the end of this message I was talking, and he looked familiar, and he goes, "You remember me?" No. He said, "Officer Sherwood, do you remember me?" It was that guy. He got out of prison. He reformed his life, and he thanked me for putting him into prison. And he thanked me for treating him as a dignified human being in the middle of his worst time of his life. And it blew me away. Wow. But that's the kind of relationships that we can have with people that mean something. We might not see it right now, but those relationships, they're taken away. Because the law enforcement personnel out there are the heroes of our society. They're the fabric of who we are. And even the people that don't like them, call them when they have a problem. The irony of that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. My old man was a law enforcement officer. So every now and then, I would say once every year or so, I would see a random person go up to him, and it would be the same exact story you just told. And
yeah,
I'm interviewing somebody next week. His name is Jared Klickstein. I saw him get promoted by Mr. Michael Schellenberger, great author, who is a former transient. He's a former drug addict and former inmate, former convict, all those things, who credits his book that he's coming out with. It should be without in the next couple months here. His whole premise is how if he wasn't put in a place like that, if he wasn't given that, he would have never stopped doing it. He would have never stopped hurting his family. He would have never stopped even having a misunderstanding of police officers. He's like, "I became friends with police officers. They were nice to me in there. They were understanding. I stopped doing drugs because they weren't available to me. I got the chance to write letters to my loved ones saying, now that I have some clarity, I'm sorry I was hurting you guys so much." Yeah. I'm interested to hear and reading his book. But you're right, sir. There's a lot of situations out there that we can help, and it doesn't have to be in law enforcement. It could be in anywhere else. Mr. Sherwood, I promise you an hour. We did an hour. Holy shit. How fast did that go by?
Yeah, man. We covered a lot of ground, and then we could go on. I appreciate you. You do a really good job. Great conversationalist. And I appreciate your heart and your head behind stuff, man.
Thank you very much, sir. Likewise, that means a great deal to me. That's, quick story. I started this podcast with that premise alone. The podcast was built off from my ages of 19 to 21. We got nothing to do. You're not old enough to go to no bar. And the only conversations you have are in your garage with your buddies. And it's one minute you're talking about aliens. The next minute you're talking about politics. The next one you're talking about family. And you're about the kid down the street who has got an eye this way. Whatever. You're talking about everything. It's an alternate take version of a serious conversation. So I'm glad to have someone like you. I know we touched on every topic just a little bit, and we can dive into them like crazy. And I'm definitely bringing you back on to talk more about that. But I'm really glad the listeners got to hear your insight and how well you speak and how informed you are about a variety of topics, because it's a testament to your character to want to be good at a bunch of other things, not just one thing. I find that very admirable, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been an honor to be with you. I hope it encouraged some people out there. And if you can take anything I've said and use it right now and the lessons I've learned, man, that's just be a big old blessing to me. So I hope that is the case. And I look forward to coming back anytime you want, Danny.
Thank you, sir. Do me a favor. Tell everyone where they can find all your works, your websites, social media, everything like that, so they can keep up with Dr. Sherwood.
Super easy. They can go to Sherwood.tv, and that's kind of a central hub of everything. All of our media is there, and there's ways to, you know, books and movies and podcasts and television. They can do all that. They connect with our clinic, and there's some of the products I mentioned today. We actually develop things, too, for people, so you know, that's kind of cool. So some of that stuff's there. So go to Sherwood.tv and we can be a blessing to you. There's a way to contact us as well.
Love that. Thank you again for coming on the show, Dr. Sherwood.
You're welcome, man. Thanks for having me.
This has been Alternate Take. We'll see you guys later. Peace. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen, our interview with the great Dr. Mark Sherwood. Thank you for joining the show, sir. Man, I had such a great time. You know, like I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, Dr. Sherwood is very well-spoken, man. Very, very humble guy. And I think you guys just heard that. I put all the links to his all of his works in the podcast description. All of his books, his direct websites, link trees, all those things where you can find out his supplementation, products he promotes, and all those things, man. He's an active speaker. He's very active on Instagram, Twitter, all those things where he shares his thoughts on many different issues, man. And I'm glad that he's a part of my life now, man. Great person. And I'm glad you're my friend, brother. And that's it. So all of you other guys who are Alternate Take fans, go check out our Instagram at Alternate Take Podcast. Same with our YouTube at Alternate Take Podcast. And support, man. Share the podcast like wildfire, man. Anytime you guys share it and send it to other people, man, that's like the way I want it to be, man. I'm not a big marketer. I kind of like it old school, word of mouth, man. So the more you guys do that, the better it is for us. So thanks in advance. But that's it. This has been Alternate Take. My name is Danny Rodriguez, and I'll see you guys later. Peace.